patients at risk, a discussion of the dangers that patients face when physicians are replaced with non-physician practitioners. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Bernard. I am the co-author of the book Patients at Risk and the author of the follow-up book Imposter Doctors. Today, I'm talking with Arthur Smolensky. He is an emergency physician fighting to take medicine back from corporate interests. He recently founded a physician practice, which is called a SDG or Small Democratic Group, to replace a corporate contract management group at his local hospital. To take a really deep dive into contract management groups in the emergency department, take a listen to Patients at Risk podcast episodes 29 and 30, which is my discussion with emergency physicians Robert McNamara and Mitchell Lee. But just as a quick overview, the idea of contract management groups are intermediaries that negotiate pay between emergency physicians that work for them and hospitals. As these contract management groups became larger and more powerful, they gained a lot of market share, and the situation now is that in many areas, emergency physicians cannot find employment unless they work for one of these groups, and that means that they have to do what the groups say and keep them happy, or they may find themselves unemployed. Am I getting that about right?
Yeah. And so that's kind of what happened. You know, obviously the pay rates were a lot different back in the 70s when this was initially starting, but they would tell the hospital, hey, pay me $50 and I'll get it staffed for you. And then I would find you, Rebecca, and say, hey, do you want to work in the ER? I'll pay you $40. And so that was the origin of fee splitting, you know, where I would get paid for your work and all I had to do is maybe make a phone call to you and you would go work. And then over time that grew, you know, Team Health based in Knoxville, Tennessee, you know, they started growing with Lynn Massengale. You know, then ASEP had a bunch of rules saying, hey, we're not going to let this happen. And then in the 80s, these guys who stood to make a lot of profit from removing these barriers passed the rules and said, hey, we're going to let basically one doctor work for another and take whatever money they want. And that just progressed over time. And in the 90s, you got private equity involvement as there became more and more money. And then, you know, they started harming patients by, you know, using business strategies of going out of network, causing these huge bills for patients. And that became literally their business strategy. And while physicians are supposed to see what's billed and collected in their name, that's gone. And every physician who's ever tried to get that from their contract management group essentially gets fired. You know, they made physicians preferentially 1099. But one of the advantages of, from a corporate perspective, having 1099s is you don't owe them anything. They're not protected in the same way by the Department of Labor. You can just simply not put them on the schedule next time. And that's it. You know, you don't get to work anymore. And all of a sudden, your life is potentially uprooted because that might be the only hospital in town. And so it's one way that they can control the physicians. Additionally, a lot of hospitals really liked it because it took away due process. So when you're on the medical staff, there's some degree of due process. Whether we like it or not, there's something there to protect us. Well, this is one way to get around it, right? The hospital will go to this corporate entity and say, hey, listen, we don't want Rebecca on the schedule anymore. And if you don't do what we say, we're going to just give the contract to somebody else. It's another way that hospitals can control the physicians. And so we saw with Ming Lin, there was also a pretty well-known case in Arizona of another physician speaking up about staffing and safety publicly, and both of them essentially lost their jobs. You know, that's sort of been the downstream effect. Obviously, the No Surprises Act changed the financials of it, and we saw American Physician Partners just close up shop, and they left a lot of physicians in a lurch. We also saw that during COVID, Envision and other contract management groups cut staffing on the physician side and mid-level side to try to save money. You know, I think when you don't own your practice, you don't have control of your practice. This is what ends up happening to you.
With any type of a for-profit system, and certainly with private equity, the bottom line is how much money can we make? And when you're only getting a certain amount of reimbursement from insurance companies or Medicare, the only way you can make more money is to cut staffing or cut pay. In the case of emergency medicine and in also anesthesia and other places, we've seen a lot of physicians being replaced inappropriately with non-physician practitioners rather than working under a physician supervision. Many of them have just been hired to kind of work independently or unsupervised, which has led to some pretty serious consequences.
The difference between our group and the contract management group. So the site that we took over, they had staffing of roughly 43 physician hours a day and 31 mid-level hours per day. My group is an example. We will typically run 5 physician hours for every mid-level hour. That's kind of where we typically are rather than very close to 1-to-1. People ask me like, well, what changes did you make day one? We're like, well, listen, day one, we are not a private equity backed company. We're not trying to squeeze out every dollar. So what we've done is we went in, we said, hey, we're going to keep the staffing as is. Let's see how things go. And, you know, we're going to adjust. And so the other commitment that we made, because obviously some of the mid-levels are familiar with us, you know, they're like, are we going to have a job? And we said, listen, we are not going to fire good people. Like, that's just not what we do. During COVID, my group is an example. We didn't cut a single hour of pay for anybody. And at that time, we were staffing 7 hospitals. Everybody got to go to work. Everybody got paid. Obviously, financially, the partners, we got paid less because that's just the nature of how it goes. But our mid-levels, they didn't see any cut in their hours or any cut in their pay or cut in vacation, anything else. So, you know, they're people first, and we treat them like people first. We've been very successful in retaining our PAs and NPs. And so we went in there and we said, we're going to run it as is. We're going to staff the place appropriately with board-certified emergency physicians. We're going to keep the mid-level. So about 2 weeks into this, one of the mid-levels said, hey, I'm pregnant. I'm going to have a baby in a few months. I want to go PRN. Perfect. So our response to that is when she's going to come off the schedule, we're going to replace those hours with a physician. That's the move. And we told them and we met with them. We're like, this is how we view things. And this is how we're going to proceed. And so, you know, frankly, in our model, just being really open and honest here, it's much easier to hire physicians than it is to hire mid-levels. Pay to our physicians is better than the market. And, you know, for us, it's just easier. We don't have the infrastructure in place to train a ton of mid-levels. That's just not what we do. One of our sites, we have a residency, an emergency medicine residency, and obviously that's a great breeding ground for future doctors for us. But, you know, as an example, we took over that site day one. The physicians got a 10% pay raise day one. As of this day, we've actually not collected a penny yet, but, you know, our payroll's coming due, but we have it figured out. The PAs, they were getting paid in a very convoluted way. We cleaned it up. They got a little bit of a pay increase because that's just kind of our standard. There's no private equity cut. We're not trying to make a 20, 30, 40% return on our money. All the money comes in, it all comes right back out. And wow. So it's not hard to kind of structure it where it's better for everybody.
Because there isn't a corporate entity kind of skimming off of the top large amount. So when you say like, this isn't really a business model as the person that's kind of coordinating it to make money, it's more about the real definition of what you are, which is a D, what is it? A DSG?
SDG for a small democratic group.
SDG. Yeah. It's a small democratic group. So I'm guessing that there's probably a little bit of money to pay for some type of administration, like whoever is making the schedule.
Now with these 2 other hospitals, we are now at 10 hospitals, all in the Middle Tennessee market. For all 10 of those hospitals, we have 1 non-clinical person. That's it. She is a rock star. We outsource a lot of stuff. She works from home, so we don't have any sort of office space that we pay for. But with that, like myself in my role, I get an administrative stipend, but I work more than the average number of shifts that my partners work. You know, the president of my group, the same thing. I don't get any sort of buy down or special treatment for nights, weekends, or holidays. I work my share.
It truly is democratic.
It is truly democratic. And so, you know, like our schedule, you mentioned that now that we've grown and just the way we've grown, we have multiple schedulers, but every single one of them is a physician. Every single one of them works at the sites where they do the schedule. That's kind of our model. We're relatively administratively lean. We just, as part of this whole process of taking on these two other hospitals that we did. We looked at, you know, what is our administrative spend and how does that compare to some industry standards that we got some help from our revenue cycle management company to get an idea of what other people are doing. And so we made some adjustments there to make sure that it made sense. Our overall administrative cost is less than 3% of our revenue. So it's tiny. So all that money is getting paid out to the partners, the mid-levels, et cetera. Significantly more than half of my income is coming from working clinical shifts, not from doing administrative stuff.
I love that. And that way you still, because sometimes, you know, I'll hear physicians go into administration and a lot of times they get completely out of clinical work or they do it so minimally that I think it's amazing how quickly I think you lose touch with what happens in the trenches.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes our group different. We sort of went into all this with the mindset that you will make the best decisions, the fairest decisions, if you have to suffer the consequences of those decisions, good and bad.
Yeah.
You know, and it's tough. We have enough physicians. We have some that want to cut staffing so we can work harder, make more money. You have other people that are like, I don't want to work super crazy hard. I want to, here's my happy spot. And so, you know, it's certainly not a panacea for all. It's a democratic process where sort of everybody's a little bit unhappy, which is kind of the right place to be. And so that's kind of our model. You know, there's like the president of my group, he works nights, weekends, holidays. I mean, we all do. We get a salary. So some groups do it with like buy down of hours, buy down of shifts. We do it as here's your salary. We expect the work to be done. And then you can choose to work as much as you want. So that's our model. And like you said, there are a lot of people that quickly become out of touch. And so that's not something we wanted. And so, you know, our minimum number of shifts for anybody, including administrative people, is few shifts a week, which is not a ton, but we do a lot of other things. There's plenty of people in emergency medicine that work less. Certainly in academics, it's not uncommon, but that's our minimum. And probably the majority of my partners are working 2.5 to 3 shifts a week. And there's some, you know, obviously some people that work more.
I think the really big selling point is that it puts the control and the power and the autonomy back in the hands of the people practicing medicine. And that's something that we've lost as we've been increasingly acquired by corporations.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the big thing. And so we, you know, we sort of have two layers as to how we make decisions. So site specific, it's the medical director, you know, they have the significant interaction with the nursing staff and the nursing leadership of the emergency department, right? Because we don't run the whole thing, which I personally wish we did, but we don't. And so only they know some of the nitty gritty details. So they're empowered to decide when the shifts are and all that. That's usually done again through a less formal democratic process, whether it's asking people's opinions, getting people's thoughts, but in the end, they're kind of in charge of that. And then we have sort of another level. We want to make sure obviously the hospital's leadership is happy, the system leadership is happy. And so if anything that we do doesn't line up with that, then we sort of, from a corporate standpoint, make the changes that we need and sort of force some change to make sure that our corporate partners are happy, patients are being taken care of properly. And so that's kind of our model. You know, in the end, you know, we as physicians, we do financially well. Emergency medicine does relatively well compared to the house of medicine. And then it really just does come down to we want to take good care of patients. And that's the ultimate result. If that gets done, everything else sort of falls in place. The money will fall in place. The hospital will be happy. You know, at our various sites, we've added coverage. We've done all these things to kind of make sure that patients are taken care of in a timely manner, in a way where physicians don't feel stretched. You know, we've had a lot of physicians reach out to us, interestingly, in the last 3-4 months, wanting to join our group. And we had one that kind of skittish, came over, kind of PRN, was working at one of our kind of outlying sites. And he was like, I was just waiting to get slammed all night. It just never happened. We're like, well, we told you, this is the number of patients that we see, you know, in a 24-hour period. Obviously, things happen. It's emergency medicine. You never know, really know what's going to come through the door. But average is being average. Like, these are the numbers. You know, we don't make them up. They're real. And, you know, that site this person was at, like, I work there too. You know, this is not, I don't want to go somewhere and see, you know, 40 patients in 12 hours. Like, that's not safe. I can't provide good care. I'm going to be a total disaster when I go home. So, you know, we make sure the staffing is appropriate.
So in this case, it sounds like the hospital actually came to your group looking for some help. Is that how you first created this?
Yeah. So we have an established local reputation. Our hospital, our main hospital system, Ascension St. Thomas, they've been very happy with us. They've been good partners with us. I don't know where they kind of got our names from, whether it was some of the doctors there or, you know, CEOs talking to CEOs. That I don't know. But they reached out to us, the hospital leadership, and said, you know, we're thinking about making a change. We want to talk to you. And, you know, they had concerns. They had two sites that we took over. One of them was relatively stable, but the busier site was using a ton of locums. Lots of their physicians were very unhappy because they couldn't get shifts covered. And so they were stretching shifts longer than what was on the schedule and just all the games that people will play. And we just said, listen, day one, we can be fully covered with board certified emergency medicine physicians. Not a problem. And, you know, we knew that there was going to be pain with it because the startup date was February 1st, which is, you know, not really part of our hiring cycle. And with that, you know, we have one of my partners is taking a sabbatical because her daughter's in the Olympics and she wanted to be in Paris for that. So obviously we couldn't say no. Another one of our docs is pregnant, going to have a baby and going to take time off for that. And we knew that taking on two sites, one of which had a lot of holes, was going to stretch us thin, but we also knew that it was going to be a finite problem and we would be able to solve that. And, you know, in essence, what we do is we basically do internal locums. Like we cover backup ourselves. And so shifts don't get covered. We don't use any locums agencies, nothing like that. That also gives stability to the hospitals where it's the same group of people. We're not credentialing 10 different people a month, every month to work. It's the same group of people. And so, you know, I think that was a big selling point. I think really just the long-term stability and the engagement of the physicians. And when we took over, you know, the doctors that stayed there, you know, we talked to them and said, hey, the secret sauce for us is it engagement and involvement. And we gave them examples. Like right now, one of my partners is the chief of staff at our busiest hospital. Previously at our three kind of big Ascension sites, we've had a chief of staff at all of them. At one of our outlying sites, one of our guys is about to be the chief of staff. We have, you know, we're super involved and the hospitals want that. You know, they want physicians that are engaged and not physicians that are just there to punch the clock. And, you know, frankly, from talking to people, I know this is going to be seen by a lot of physicians, might not be the most popular thing to say, but there is a culture that I think corporate medicine has bred into medicine as a whole, where people just want to punch the clock in and out. And for my group, that's just not, like, that won't work. And so, you know, with that, we essentially hire people that view things the way we view things, which is like, you want to be engaged. It gives you a much more fulfilling career. It lets you at least feel that your voice is heard and you're not just complaining to your medical director and then your medical director gets to decide what's going to be filtered where, because they're the only voice. They only have so much time. And if all they do is complain to leadership, then nothing's going to happen. But when you sit on the chest pain committee, the stroke committee, the sepsis committee, critical care committee, the system lab services committee, the pharmaceutical therapeutics committee, we come together. We try to be very cohesive in our message. And that makes us a lot more valuable to our system, but it also makes sure that we have a bit more control over our work environment.
Well, you know, when you talk about this punching the clock, it just makes me think that physicians have developed this learned helplessness where you get hired by a company, maybe you start out with a little bit of enthusiasm that's very quickly broken from you where you're told this is how we do things here. And then over time, if you stick it out there because you have no other choice, let's say, then you just put your head down, you do your work and you clock in and you go home and you're miserable and you're burned out and you don't see it that there could be another way. A lot of doctors tell me, well, this is just how it is. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited for you to share this story, because it's an example of the timing, I think, being right, where hospitals and other groups are starting to see that this private equity, these contract management groups are not actually providing the type of quality care that hospitals want and need to be associated with. And the fact that you guys were ready and jumped to respond, even though it was going to be challenging, but you took the call and you started and you're succeeding at it. So it's really an inspiration to, I think, so many other doctors. And so I would love it if you would share with our listeners, if there are doctors out there across the country that are thinking, how do I make something like this happen? What advice would you give them?
Depending on your specialty is figuring out, where there's opportunity, right? Sometimes the hospital system has a very high level agreement, like a national type agreement or a regional type agreement, and that might be really challenging to do. And you can kind of take those, in my opinion, off the board, unless you're a very big group that really wants to grow. I think really importantly is discussing with your group ahead of time, like what's our, why, to use a little Simon Sinek, TED Talk, what's the goal? What do we want? It's really easy. And frankly, it would have been much easier for us just to put our head down and be like, this is what we do. But, we looked at it from what's best for patients, what's best for emergency medicine. Our specialty, of emergency medicine is really under attack. We've not been done any favors by our largest specialty organization, in my opinion. And I think because of that, it's got to be a grassroots thing because there's no national entity that's going to come and help you and save you. And so what I would say is figure out what's available, reach out to the hospitals, because I can assure you that the corporate groups of whatever specialty you're in are reaching out to your hospital system, trying to take your contract. And so you can play defense. And I think there's obviously something to that, but it's also not wrong to go on the offensive. And I think one advantage that you'll see is as you grow, you had a little more sway with the insurance companies. You can potentially make a little bit more money for yourself, but in the end, you strengthen yourself. The bigger you are, the harder it is to replace you, the bigger you are, the more you can offer of meaningful, stuff. Like the corporate groups will talk about how they have all these programs they run. But anybody who, like, I'll speak to emergency medicine because that's what I really know. They're like, oh, well, we have where you can call a senior doctor on and they'll help you. And I'm like, I work with 50 doctors who I know. I don't have to talk to a random guy on the phone to get an idea of what to do. I can just call my partner, or I'm working on shift with my partner who I know is vetted, is really smart, and they know their stuff. At any time, now there's a doctor on at 10 different hospitals. I can call any of them and get some advice if I happen to be working by myself. And, at our bigger sites, usually there's 2, 3, or 4 people on at a time. And so, you have that. So there is some advantage to scale, I think. You get to a certain size, you potentially have to change your corporate structure. I think that's something that kind of worries me if we do continue to look at growth. Having one administrative person seems very, very lean. We're able to do it now. Over time, that'll change. That'll be a challenge. And I think depending on what specialty you're in, you have to sort of see how you can do that. A lot of this stuff can be outsourced. And so you don't feel like you have to do it all yourself. But I think, look at where the strategic opportunities are. Maybe you're in a city and there's a hospital or a group or a specialty that is backed by private equity nationally, and the payer mix is great because it's in the nice part of town. Go talk to the hospital, see if they're happy. Just ask for a meeting. Most CEOs, depending on your specialty, be more than happy to talk to you. And so I think that's the move. I think understanding what you bring and what's different both to the hospital and to the insurers, I think that helps lead that conversation a little bit. And you can make it like what we did, in my opinion. It's a win-win-win. Everybody's happier. Everybody's better off. Just the corporate entity's gone. And, the private equity group will make less money because they're not going to be able to skim from those sites.
It seems like a lot of this has to do with physicians working together and building our relationships with each other. And I think increasingly we've become so siloed where we don't see each other as much. We don't talk as often. And I think that this is the key, is getting together and coming up with these really creative solutions, because we're all here to take care of patients. And that's really our common goal.
It's doable. It's not easy. I do think it takes a lot of people working together, understanding different people's strengths and trying to leverage that. And if needed, you know, partnering with some outside entity to kind of help you walk where you need to get. I think, you know, people that really love their communities, this is the move. You cannot legitimately, in my opinion, say, I love my community, but I'm letting like this outside private equity company run this specialty or the hospital or emergency medicine, because their job, their duty is to their shareholders. And that duty is strictly financial. It has nothing to do with patient care. It's got nothing to do with the Hippocratic Oath that we all took. And while it's kind of cheesy and all that, like, I firmly believe that our duty first is not to make money. It's to the patient, to do the right thing, to take good care of people, to do so in a way that fits within our morals. And, you know, it also doesn't mean that you have to have perfect patient satisfaction scores, because, you know, not everybody who wants the lauded needs the lauded, but it is to do what you think is right and treat patients with respect. And then the financial part of it will come along. And for us, obviously, that was a big piece, you know, being able to do that. But I think it's because we have a good reputation. We've used that with the insurance companies to leverage, you know, them. I'm sure our rates are not the same as, you know, the big corporate groups are that, you know, pay $1 billion to negotiators. But we also don't need that 30% skim, and we can do just fine. We also are corporately lean, which also helps. And so all that is doable across every specialty. Obviously, every specialty is different in what they need and what they bring. But I think that would kind of be the message. I mean, hopefully it's one of hope. I do think things are changing. The tide is turning, you know, certainly in emergency medicine. And I think anesthesia, the No Surprises Act, really smacked some of these private equity people upside the head. You know, their typical, you know, runtime of an investment is 7 years. Most of the funds that own these entities, you know, are have to close or pay out in 12 or 13 years. That horizon is coming. And so, you know, we will see what happens. But the opportunities there, I do think, you know, for some doctors, like, they don't have the experience or the knowledge to run their own group. I'm not really here to plug AM Physician Group, but that is a great resource.
What is it?
I know AM. AAEM Physician Group.
Oh, AAEM, yes.
Yeah.
Great. So American
McNamara
Academy
is the
Emergency Medicine.
Emergency Medicine Physician Group. I know McNamara is the CMO of that. I will say too, ASEP has a small group kind of crash course. I know somebody who went, they had a good experience. I'm not shy to say that ASEP is not my favorite organization, but that is a good program. They have some other programs that are worthwhile. I know if other specialties have something similar. But, you know, at the very least, in my opinion, I've helped people in New Mexico, in Pennsylvania, California, Oregon, you know, other places as well. But if you call, you know, somebody you did residency with that's in a private group, I'm sure they'll be happy to help you at least to some degree. And it takes some effort. I mean, there's no doubt. This isn't going to be a passive process, but it's a worthwhile one. When we talked about it as a group, I said, listen, there's no money in this, but this is the right thing to do. And I'm like, this is my personal little passion project, is kicking these people out, letting doctors own their own practice. Even the group that we took over, I told them, I'm like, I'll give you all the help you need. If you don't want to join our group, that's fine. Like, again, this isn't a money thing for my group. I'm like, I'll help you. I can walk you through it, but you're going to have to do the work. I'm not doing all the work for you.
That's exactly what I do for direct primary care, because people all the time, and I coach them and give them, but I won't spoon feed them, but here's all the information and I'm happy to share it with you. No charge. And it's just to make the system better for our patients.
Yeah. And I tell them, like, you know, look over the stuff. If you have questions, I'll answer whatever you want. I'll be super transparent, you know, other than sharing like detailed financial stuff in my group, like everything else is kind of open and on the table.
I got to tell you, just talking to you has given me a lot of hope. Like, even again, as a patient, I look at you and people and your colleagues, and I think, thank God, if I have to go to the emergency room, somebody like you is going to be there to take care of me or someone that I love. So I just want to thank you so much for the time you put into your education, the care and compassion that you have for patients and the fact that you're fighting to make the system better for everybody. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And if you'd like to learn more about this topic, I encourage you to get the books Patients at Risk and the follow-up book Imposter Doctors, which talks a lot about the corporate practice of medicine. And if you're a physician and you'd like to advocate for physician-led care and truth and transparency among healthcare practitioners, please join our group. It's called Physicians for Patient Protection. Our website is physiciansforpatientprotection.org. If you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, send me an email through the website, patientsatrisk.com. Thanks so much, and we'll see you on the next podcast. Mm-hmm.